Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your entrepreneurial peers on the journey of self-leadership mastery and life success. Reinvent or evolve yourself as you redesign your business. Dual innovation. Take charge of who you next become. Feel more deeply to think, act, lead, and mentor more clearly and more effectively. Learn something new from our conversation today.
Really enjoyed the conversation, Nancy, and appreciate you having us on.
Thank you so much for having us and for your votes of confidence and positivity and putting good vibes out there for us in terms of that goal of being an enduring company that's here to help people. We really appreciate that love and support.
Welcome to We Mentor Mondays. I'm Nancy. Today's mentor guests co-founded Habit Aware out of a habit formed by stress and anxiety that started, I think, through a trauma. But we'll get into that in a little bit. So, hi, Samir Kumar. How are you?
Hi, Nancy. I'm good. Great to be here.
Yeah, good. Good to have you here. And hi, Anila Idnani.
Hi, Nancy. Thank you for having us to share our story.
Oh, good. And where in Minnesota are we talking from?
We are calling in from Minneapolis.
All right. A close little neighbor here to Golden Valley.
Yep.
Yeah. Great. Well, Samir and Anila are married, and our focus for today's conversation is to learn more about both of their extraordinary entrepreneurial journey in co-founding their company and how they've personally kind of transformed toward more self-love, which is underlying a lot of these habits that we get into that are disabling. To give you a little bit more introduction, Anila and Samir co-founded Habitware in 2017 with two other partners. So John Pritchard, he's the lead hardware engineer, and Kirk Klobe, and he's the chief technical operator in the company. And they've developed hand gesture detection technologies that they call Keen Smart Bracelets. So they have Keen and then Keen 2. The Keen 2 bracelet just came out this month, and we'll go into more details about that as well. The Keen bracelet tracks hand motions and is designed with love to help those suffering from BFRB and curb their compulsive hand habits. So one in 20 people, or 21 million Americans, have body-focused repetitive behaviors like hair pulling, skin picking, and nail biting. The scientific names are trichotillomania, compulsive hair pulling, dermatillomania, which is excessive skin picking, and onychophagia, which is chronic nail biting. So you also developed or started a podcast series called Love, Strength, and Awareness to help those suffering to have the resources they need to continue to address their chronic behaviors in a positive way. So I was at the Minnesota Cup Awards presentation in 2018, where Anila and Samir won in their category for mental health tech startup. So I wanted to congratulate you for that. I was thrilled. And really to take your unexpected journey of self-discovery and use it as a tool to create an entrepreneurial venture that can help so many people is really pretty amazing. And you're doing it as a couple, which is even more challenging, and plus two other business partners. So a lot has transpired. You and Samir recently, or both of you for Habitware, were awarded a National Science Foundation grant. You've also been recognized as Time Magazine's Best Innovation, plus you've won a number of other awards. And so what would you first like to say to our audience today? Samir, you want to start?
Sure. I guess, I just want to say thanks for having us and listening to our story. You know, for us, it's been just really an incredible journey of, really taking one person's problem, my wife, Anila, and trying to see if we could help her. And when it appeared that we had something there and maybe we could help others, And you could just see other people's eyes light up when we talked about the solution, that we just felt compelled to take it forward. And so that's really what's led us here, is a lot of luck, and it feels like the world has been pulling us in this direction.
Oh,
and
nice.
So for us, it's just been really, really wonderful journey.
Oh, great. As I talk with many guests, I like to hear a little bit more about each person's background to give us kind of a fuller picture of how your journey started into entrepreneurship. And so, Samir, what are 4 to 6 words that would describe each of your caretakers that raised you?
Oh, well, I had basically my two caretakers were my mom and dad.
Okay.
I would say my mom was really, you know, warm, almost spiritual. She also was constantly learning, and she was also very busy.
She's also what?
Very busy.
Okay. What was she busy with?
Yeah. Oh, well, she worked mostly. She was a doctor, and it was a lot of, you know, we would see her in the evenings and a little bit on weekends. But, you know, mostly my dad was the primary caretaker for us. He worked a full-time job also. But he was picking us up, taking us to our sports games, whatever it was, other activities. And so for him, I would say caring, selfless. He had high expectations, and he was also reserved.
Hmm. Excellent. Okay. And who else was in your home growing up?
It was just my brother, my older brother.
And he's a couple years older than you?
Yep, 3 years.
Okay. And where's he at now?
He lives in New York now.
Okay. And where did you grow up as a family unit?
We grew up in Michigan, outside of Detroit.
Okay. And what was it like growing up in your home?
You know, it was probably a pretty typical 80s, 90s suburban, growing up upbringing, really. We played a lot outside with neighbors. We had lots of scheduled activities. We focused on our schoolwork quite a bit. So, I really had a nice, enjoyable time as a child.
Oh, that's great. And what were some of your biggest challenges?
You know, we were pretty fortunate in general, had good parents who worked hard and loved us. The hardest thing probably was that my parents ended up in Michigan. They were immigrants. And so they were away, you know, very far away from any close family or longer term friends. So I just remember being the last one to be picked up a lot, and but I don't think we had anything that I would call a significant challenge, at least that I can remember at this point.
Okay, and so do you remember how setbacks were handled? It sounds like you were in a very stable environment, and so you were very productive in how you, just your parents, kind of, how did they problem solve?
Yeah, I think so. You know, maybe they probably shielded me from you know, most of the problems, which I'm grateful for. I don't think it was like a fairy tale by any means. It was they had a challenging time balancing everything, you know, full-time jobs and two kids, and doing it pretty much all on their own. So I don't think there was, you know, I'm sure they had their share of setbacks. But fortunately for me, being also the younger child, I think I was shielded from a lot of that. And so for me, it was really, really pretty stable. I can recall them having arguments every now and again, but they did their best to always kind of, you know, make sure I knew that it was between them. It wasn't because of me or my brother or anything.
Oh, I see. So they had some good boundaries and had some in how they handled what was adult decisions and what were kids and what you needed to worry about and what you didn't need to worry about.
Yeah, I think so. And as I said, I'm pretty grateful for that. And we're doing our best to take that to our into our lives with our children.
Yeah, because you've got two children, two boys, right?
That's right.
Yeah. And how old are they?
7 and 3.
7 and 3. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. What were some of the things that you were interested that you could do for hours on and when you were younger?
Oh, for me, you know, I was always doing something. I was always in certain activities. You know, the thing that I loved to do was just go outside with a couple of the neighborhood kids, and we would go and we would play frisbee golf all around the neighborhood. We would, you know, or just do any sort of activity. We even went to the neighborhood pond and went fishing. So I really loved spending time outdoors, and I think it was a different time when you could send kids outside and just tell them to be home by dinner, or whereas we do less of that now, I think. But for me, that was really a wonderful time.
Yeah. And then you went on to school. Can you tell us a little bit about that journey through school?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, I guess, you know, in terms of college, I left Michigan for the first time really in any permanent basis. After high school, I went to college on the East Coast at Yale. And that was an amazing experience to be around such world-class thinkers and amazing professors and such a beautiful campus. So it was really, really wonderful. I think back to, you know, how I spent my time there, and I'm like, wow, there's probably so much more I could have done. But, you know, I think at the time I was really focused on, you know, just doing well in my courses and having a lot of fun with my friends. So that's what I did, and went on to work in the business world after that, mostly on the East Coast and a couple of different jobs.
Okay. And you got degrees in applied physics and economics, and then went on to the Wharton School to get your MBA. So you really got a lot of exposure to different ways in which you could live your life. Do you remember growing up with any business owners?
You know, not really. And so that part has been a little bit foreign. I mean, obviously, you know, I will say my mom was in private practice. So that is a business, but yep. It just feels very different than you know, like an entrepreneurial venture. That said, you know, the more I think about it now, you know, there's a lot that's the same, which is managing employees, handling out, you know, all the nitty gritty details and minor headaches that come along with managing a business that I definitely saw. And so but I just never thought of it as her running a business. You know, I always thought of it as her going and seeing patients, you know, doing what a doctor does.
Right. In a field that's really well organized.
Right.
Yeah. Where in the technology world, it's kind of like the Wild West, it seems.
Yeah.
Right. At different times. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, good. Excellent. So this is a good time to kind of bring Anila into the picture. Under what circumstances, Samir, did you meet Anila?
You know, we met when we were both kind of like fish out of water, I think, a little bit in Miami. I had moved down there a couple of years after college to take a job in finance. Anila had gone down there as she was in the midst of a transition between accounting and what she wanted to do next, which was advertising. So she was going to a creative school, and we both didn't really know too many people down there, except we had some mutual friends who introduced us. And so we started hanging out, and that's how we met.
Oh, that's excellent. And Anila, what kind of environment did you grow up in? What were 4 to 6 words that would describe your caretakers?
Yeah, as I'm sitting and listening to Samir share about his childhood with Indian immigrant parents, I'm seeing similarities. So I wrote down for my mom that she was very hardworking. I actually also had busy because she's kind of like always on the go. She ran her own dental practice. She's also very strong and positive. And my dad, I always remember him as being very funny, smart, reserved, and calm.
Mm. Who else was in your family growing up?
And I grew up with my sister, who was 6 years older as well. So she was kind of like second mom, because she was the one that would be home when I would come home from school. And,
sure.
You know, 6 years. Fixing me a snack. And,
yeah. Oh, nice. And 6 years is plenty of an age spread, so there's not any real competition. It's a different relationship. And so you both grew up in two with a sibling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you had an experience at a very young age that I just, I think is must be the worst, hardest thing to go through ever. You want to describe a little bit of what happened to you when you were 12?
Yeah. So in my freshman year of high school, or maybe like eighth grade, middle school, don't really remember exactly, but my dad was diagnosed with leukemia. And so that kind of just was a, already growing up as a child, I felt a little bit out of place. And then this made it just a little bit more like hard to understand life.
Yeah.
So I just sort of watched him battle cancer for 4 years, basically my whole high school career. And then he passed away my junior year summer, so leading into senior year of high school.
Wow. And what was high school looking like for you then? Were you able to participate in all the things you wanted to? Or, you know, I can imagine that this was kind of an, you know, something in the background constantly.
Yeah, it was, it was a mix of going to the hospital after school and then doing some of the extracurriculars that I was passionate about. But I think both my parents kind of gave space for me to still be a kid in that way. But I was kind of also more of a homebody. And while I had friends, I think I enjoyed just like being at home more than anything. So mostly creative pursuits is what I focused on.
Okay. Do you have any examples of those?
Like growing up, I used to really enjoy photography and making scrapbooks and, you know, cutting out from magazines and making collages. And one of the extracurriculars I really enjoyed was our literary magazine. So by senior year, I was one of the editors, and it was just really fun to literally select all of the poetry and in that would go into these magazines, and then also do all the layout and the design. It was just really fun. And I did that with a couple of really close friends. So,
And where was this all taking place?
I grew up in Long Island, New York.
Okay. How did the leukemia progress for your dad, and how did that change the family dynamics?
So my dad fell sick with cancer. He did rounds of chemo, got better for a little while and was in remission, and then it came back. While he was in remission, my sister got married, and then I think shortly after that, he passed away.
Okay. Oh, boy. And what was your family's coping strategies at that time to kind of get through that?
I think our family was all pretty reserved. So we didn't really talk about it much. We kind of just like dealt with it.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
It was more just going through the have to motions of like, we have to go to the hospital. We have to do this. We have to, you know, like the things you need to do to care for the person, to be there for them. But never really like taking a look at what was happening to each of us going through that.
Yeah. And so what was happening to you during that time?
It was just a really hard and confusing time. It was, you know, high school time, which was meant to be your last sort of time period to just be a goofball and, you know, just getting into college and the real world. And so it felt like a lot of weight was on my shoulders when really, it was my sister and my mom, obviously, taking most of the care and being at the hospital and stuff. I was still a kid. So it was just sort of something that was happening kind of in the background.
Yeah.
While still kind of focus on my studies and get into college and do my extracurriculars so that I had a strong application and all that stuff. So it's kind of like life kept going.
Okay. Yeah. Life would kept. Yeah. Okay. Cause you, yeah, you continued to go to school. And where'd you go to college at?
I went to a state school in upstate New York called Binghamton. I had gotten a full ride there, and it was a nice way to be able to kind of give my mom a financial break, in a sense that after all the bills, medical bills and stuff, I didn't even like know. I just kind of assumed. And I was just like, this will be a good way for me to get away and for it to be zero stress on either of us.
Yeah.
So that's where I went to school.
So then you eventually ended up in Miami.
Yeah.
Okay. And was that after you graduated?
Yeah. So I went to Binghamton to study accounting. They have a really good school management program there. And through that process, I went to work as an auditor for a few years. And then just sort of kind of fell out of love with the joy of accounting, which I did. You know, I actually wound up taking a high school accounting class because the photography class I wanted was full. And I really just kind of fell for accounting, in the sense that I really enjoyed balancing T accounts. And I think that's probably a testament to the anxiety that I had back then that I didn't realize I had back then.
Sure.
But it was just something that, you know, it made things all line up. And so I continued studying it, continued working in it. But after a point, it got to, I just, you know, wasn't completely fulfilled, and decided, kind of looked back on all the things I used to do as a kid, like the high school extracurriculars and the literary magazine and doing scrapbooking and arts and crafts and write a lot of writing, and decided to go back to school for advertising, design, and copywriting.
Mm. And where did, and was that through a different school?
Yeah, and that took me to, it's called Miami Ad School. So it took me to Miami, right on South Beach, where I got to learn by creating ad campaigns for, you know, fake clients.
Okay. I bet you enjoyed that, huh?
Yeah, it was a really, you know, complete opposite way of learning, which was, here's a blank slate and just go create, versus, you know, here's a grid paper and make sure everything lines up and, you know, your everything balances, and just complete opposite.
Yeah, right. So how did you and Samir kind of run into each other?
So as Samir said, we have mutual friends that connected us. So my best friend from high school went to undergrad with one of his good friends and roommates when he was working up in Boston after college. So a little confusing, but they knew each other. And then when, you know, they were talking and saying, oh, I have a friend that's moving down. Oh, I have a friend that's moving down. They just connected us over email. We met a couple of times for dinner and drinks, and then just kind of realized, like, oh, we have a few other mutual friends that have just moved down to Miami, and we all kind of just started hanging out. And then slowly but surely, just the two of us started hanging out.
Okay. Nice. Sounds lovely. And how did you eventually make your way back to Minnesota? Or I don't know why I'm saying back, but to Minnesota.
Well, Minnesota has my heart, so I think in some way I was always supposed to be here. After Miami, we went back to New York. Samir took a new job. I finished up my school at Miami, went back home to stay with my mom and finish out and start working there. And then Samir went back to graduate school, finished that. We got married and then started looking for postgraduate school job opportunities, and landed in the City of Lakes.
Okay. Well, that's excellent. All right. And Samir, what was the work that you ended up doing at that time?
Oh, I took a job in corporate strategy with my boss. I had previously worked with him before in Boston, so we reconnected. So I took a job in corporate strategy here in Minnesota at a financial services firm.
And so you each kind of got settled into the Twin Cities. And Samir, when did you start noticing that Anila had kind of used her hands on her face a lot, was touching herself or plucking her eyebrows?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to say, I guess, because I think I'd seen it for a while, but I didn't know that there was anything different or problematic about it. I didn't notice that she was actually pulling hair from her eyebrows. And so the first time that I really found out was one time I had basically just caught her before she had a chance to put her makeup or cover up on, and she had no eyebrows at this time. So it must have been a particularly bad period for her. And I said, "Where are your eyebrows?" And she basically had no explanation at that point and had to come clean and told me about her disorder, trichotillomania. And it was something that I had never heard of. So it was just a moment of what's going on and curiosity for me. I just didn't understand. So I was really just taking it in at that point.
Yeah. Well, I remember having a high school friend who just came to school one day without eyebrows, and she was kind of introducing it as kind of the new fad, that this is the new style. But then now as we're discussing this, I'm thinking, you know, maybe it wasn't. Anila, when did you start realizing that it was something you were kind of doing more research on to find that there's a name that goes with it?
Yeah, so my hair pulling started in my early tweens, probably around puberty and, you know, around the time my dad was getting sick. This was kind of the coping mechanism that I leveraged, if you will. Mm-hmm. And it really wasn't until my mid-20s while I was working in accounting that I just, you know, went and did an online search. Why am I pulling out my hair? And that's when I finally found the medical term for it. Up until then, so about 10 years or so, I had thought that I was alone and weird and wrong for doing it, which is why I didn't share with anyone. And then in my 20s, I figured out, oh, it's something. It's a medical condition. It's a mental health condition. And that just kind of was something that I needed to take time to process before I could really like deal with the actual hair pulling. Because there's just a lot loaded in finding out you're not alone and finding out there's a condition and finding out there's a community. And but then also finding out there's no treatments or cures or understanding in the psychological community. And so it was a lot to process. And it was also, you know, there's kind of a spectrum when it comes to these conditions and a cycle. And so it would go from really high pulling urges to really low pulling urges. And it just at that moment in time wasn't the thing I needed to deal with because there was other things going on that I needed to focus on. And so I kind of just let it be what it was in my life. And then fast forward to that day that Samir caught me. That was the moment where I had to no longer let it have a say in my life.
And so what age were you and how long had you been married at that point?
That was early 30s.
Like
so like early 30s. Okay. And we were married for about a year, about 2 years by then, 3 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
How did this then evolve? Like once you came out to Samir and just kind of shared that you were having these experiences and you'd done some research, what were some of the next steps after you kind of realized, you know, there's a spectrum, there's a cycle, this is where I'm at. I have lows and highs, but I can't deal with it right now, or I need to deal with it in different parts. So where between then and to start getting the idea to develop a technology?
Yeah. I mean, once I sort of shared with Samir what it was, he did some research online to try to better understand it and just started asking questions to better understand. And then one day we're just sitting on the couch and we're watching TV and I'm pulling and he gently grabbed my hand. And, you know, I thought it was, and he used to do this when back when we were in Miami and we were watching TV. So I had even thought back then that he knew, but later I just found that he, you know, just wanted to hold my hand. but this one, which was, you know, but this night was, he saw me pulling. And so he just, you know, grabbed my hand to hold it. And that was the moment where I said, if I just had something that could notify me, that could be that little hug to say, hey, your hands are not where you want them to be, but in a kind, gentle way. Because as we got to talking with other people with the condition, we found that, you know, other loved ones are not so kind when they say, hey, you're pulling, hey, you're picking, hey, you're biting your nails. It's more coming from a place of agitation than of love. And so how can we be that for people?
Yeah. Samir, what were you going through as you were kind of realizing that this is more than just a minor habit, that this is actually something that's pretty compulsive and kind of, you know, she's doing it without noticing?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think at the time I didn't realize at all that this had a deeper effect. You know, it had affected her for a long time, you know, beyond just the physical aspect of it, but also the psychological, impacting how she felt about herself and how it impacted the decisions she made about her life. And I'm still, I think now to this day, not fully, you know, I don't fully understand the full impact, but I definitely understand more about how it had an impact on her life. And so for me at the time, it was really just about learning, trying to understand why it was a big deal. And I think over time, and especially after speaking to so many people with the condition, now I think I have a pretty good idea of, you know, just what it does to people, and it makes a lot more sense. So,
yeah. And Anila, eventually you did a TED Talk, but this was before you did the TED Talk. You two developed this technology. So when did it go from the aha moment when Samir gently pulled your hand from your eyebrow when you were picking, what were the next places that you went with the idea?
Yeah, after that, we started trying to see first, does it already exist? Is there anything out there that we could buy and use right away? And there wasn't. And we said, well, you know, why not us? Why can't we make it? And so we turned to the Minneapolis Twin Cities startup community, which was kind of the way that we had started just exploring Minneapolis to begin with when we first moved here, to get to know, you know, to go to meetups on technology topics and stuff, and had by then made a bunch of friends in the community and was working out of a co-working space. And so I just sort of drummed up the courage to share our idea as well as my hair pulling secret with new friends. And that was kind of how we were able to just slowly but surely start meeting people and going to the right events to meet John and Kirk, who eventually became our co-founders, after a hackathon weekend where they made a prototype. Samir, John, and Kirk made a prototype together, and it kind of worked. And then from there, we just kind of worked nights and weekends until we got something that was a little more consumer ready.
And then when did you decide, like, okay, I'm putting all our resources in this, we're quitting our other jobs, and we're going to go full tilt with this?
That was in January 2016 when we were accepted into a hardware accelerator program called HAX, H-A-X.
Oh, that's where, okay.
it is based in Shenzhen, China, and it's a 3-month program. And you go there and you meet with some of the best hardware engineers and marketing experts and business leaders, and they help propel your company from, you know, prototype to consumer ready. And so that was the moment where it was, you know, this is it. Either we do this or we don't. And so we took the leap.
Yeah, that leap of faith. And where did you land after you took the leap? You founded the company. You learned how what it would take to kind of build the technology.
Yeah, you know, we got to China, and we were able to, at the end of that, really launch our pre-order campaign. And so it was finally out to the public, and we were committing to make and deliver these units, provided, of course, some people actually were interested in buying them. And, you know, we found it was just an amazing response the first few days of that launch, where we would just see the orders pour in and people write in with their stories and, you know, asking if they could get it early or, you know, and so it was real at that point. So we worked for another year to actually make the products and get it fully ready. And we started shipping in 2017.
Okay. And how were you supporting yourselves at that time?
We had a couple of ways. We were, you know, one, we were living off some savings. Two, we were fortunate to raise a little bit of money that came along with the hardware accelerator acceptance. They also invest in your company a little bit. And so we were able to, you know, kind of make ends meet with the money that we had raised that was, you know, going to the company, as well as to paying the founders a little bit of cash each month and using our savings for the rest of it.
Wow, that's excellent. All right. And let's pull in kind of this next step, and then we'll have a second conversation to go a little full tilt into the next developmental phases. And one of the things that, Anila, you said is underneath the compulsive behavior is self-love.
Mm-hmm.
So in our next conversation, I would like to, you know, kind of give the definition of self-love and also just share some things that you've been learning about self-love. But, you know, as we weave it into kind of our conversation, because it seems like you found each other in a very loving and connected and caring relationship. You've been slowly kind of working your life together in a way that you're impacting the world in such a profound way. And that just doesn't happen, you know, without a lot of devotion. And both of you having the depth in, and your other two partners as well, in how did you keep your understanding with each other and grow together as a group of four? So we'll kind of shape this end of our conversation, and then we'll take off from there in our next conversation. Does that sound good to you?
Sure.
Okay.
Yep. Sounds good.
Okay. All right. You got back from China. Did all four partners go?
Three out of the four of us went to China. One of our partners just had family commitments that made it difficult, but we did like probably almost daily, nightly calls to check in and work, you know, working box step.
Okay. And then when you got back from China, what were some of the next pivotal steps that really launched you forward? Actually leaped your huge leaps forward. They weren't.
Yes, that was pretty much the end of the program in China, was coming back to the US and doing kind of a demo day and launching for pre-order, which Samir kind of talked about, just how excited the community was for something that was made for them and by them. And so we had a phenomenal response, and then took the next few months to go from to really just get all of our manufacturing in order to push the button on production and be able to deliver to the customers who pre-ordered. And that happened in 2017. And then from then on, we've been you know, in market, helping people take control of these compulsive behaviors. And as you mentioned earlier, we were able to receive research grants from both the National Institute of Mental Health and the National Science Foundation to help us improve on the technology and kind of prove efficacy. And all of that has resulted in now us releasing for pre-order our newest version of the bracelet, which we call Keen 2, which is really what we wanted Keen to be. It's more of a holistic solution in that it provides you with the opportunity to build awareness of your hands, but also teaches you the methodology to learn to replace hair pulling, skin picking, nail biting with healthier soothing strategies so that you truly are overcoming and taking control of these automatic behaviors, and going from kind of autopilot to aware and in control. And so that's what we're working on now to get to market, in the same way. So kind of working through the manufacturing, the app development, and excitedly welcoming new Keen family members into the fold.
That's cool. And how did you develop the roles and responsibilities with each other? Was that continually something you were working out as you went along and you saw people's strengths? Or how do you work together in that cohesive group of four?
Yeah, I think the beauty of our team is that we are all coming at this problem from our unique perspectives and our unique experiences and expertise. So, you know, I come at it from a place of this is how life was when I suffered from this condition, and from my marketing, design, advertising background of here is how I want to communicate the work that I do to people.
Yeah.
Samir comes at it from more of the business analytical and like more of the business vision side of things. John is a hardware engineer by trade and comes at it from that technical aspect. And Kirk is our technical co-founder on the software and firmware side. So comes at it from that aspect of, you know, here's how it's going to work. Here's how it's going to work, how the bracelet's going to work with the app and all of that technical aspect. So it's sort of this unique mix of head and heart together that I think we all sort of work really well together from that perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. You've gotten some of the kindest reviews that I've ever read of people trying to, you know, like say, you know, I tried this out, this piece didn't work quite right, but I think if you did it this way or, you know, I just was really struck by the loving community that you've developed.
Yeah. And I think it just comes from wanting to be there for people, like actually wanting to be there for people, not just saying we want to be there for people. Like we put our heart into what we do. Like I know the names of some customers, we've met them at conferences, we just approach it in a different way. And I think that comes through in how people see us and how people meet us and how people, you know, even if they do have a not great experience, there's still a connection of positivity that they're left with when they engage with us, whether it's because our newsletters are helpful to them or the one-on-one training call was helpful to them. Just helping people recognize they're not alone. And I think people are starving for that. And we want to make sure that they understand that we're here for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And your TED Talk was just, you really put yourself out there in a way like this is your life mission. This is what your soul is here to do. Samir, what is the three most kind of important lessons that you've learned so far about yourself and each other since you've launched Habitware?
So for me, Habitware. First one is that being vulnerable, as hard as it is really worth it, whether it's, you know, me and Anila being vulnerable with each other about what's bugging us or our insecurities, or, you know, what Anila has had to do, which is be vulnerable out to the world with her condition that she held secret for 20 years. But every time that we do it, I think we come out stronger. And so that's been one lesson.
So that's how you manage the risk, right? You've noticed the risk of putting yourself out there and you're realizing it's worth taking.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
But second, I think I've learned that for myself, you know, just having a healthy mix of confidence and paranoia is important, you know, and I think that confidence has to come from the hard work and knowing what you've built and what your plan is. But also, you can't be you can't be resting on your laurels because there's several other companies and other, it's a moving market. Mm-hmm. And so we have to keep an eye on what's going on if we're and reassessing our plan. So that's been another thing, just to make sure that we have an eye on what's going on, but also knowing that our plan is good and sticking to it.
Mm, yeah.
And then third, I would say is that, you know, Anila and I are definitely stronger together. A lot of people, I think, question a husband and wife team, but I believe that it would be much harder if just one of us was doing this and couldn't really share with the other, you know, the ins and outs of what struggles were going on or what issues were happening, why she needed to just do work for a weekend and I needed to take the kids, you know, without being fully in it, I don't think I would be able to understand to the extent that I do. And that, the benefits of just being by each other's side and having that flexibility has been really, really good for both of us.
Yeah. And I can see where you can offer each other a lot of empathy in what you're going through as you take on these different risks. How about you, Anila?
Yeah, I definitely echo a lot of what Samir is saying in terms of being able to understand the struggles of running this business and creating the work that we're doing, and how that kind of helps us manage all the work that next needs to get done.
Yeah.
One of the things that I think was a big lesson in working together is just kind of to that along those lines is just respecting each other's work styles, which, to be honest, is something I'm still learning how to do. sometimes there's just, you know, to Samir's point of confidence and paranoia, like there's just sometimes things that I want to talk about right now, but I can't because he's in a meeting or it's not business hours and it's time to like just chill and relax. But for me, the noise in my head, I need to kind of get it out. And so working on respecting that, the different styles that we have, like I actually prefer working at night. And so for me, my brain is even more on then, whereas Samir's work style is do everything during the day and I relax at night, whereas I'm kind of the opposite. So that's one lesson that I think is very beneficial to be learning and to be working towards.
Yeah.
As something else that I've kind of learned is just, you know, just kind of staying in faith and knowing that we can do these hard, really challenging, really new things. Like, you know, as I mentioned before, all four of us co-founders have our expertises, but it's all still new to us in many ways, and learning by doing and having that faith and that confidence that we're on the right track, that we have the right advisors around us to help us make decisions when we are unsure. And just having that trust that we can do this.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, you know, looking back in my career, going from accounting to advertising to now this, and just for anyone who may be listening, who's questioning, is this what I want to do with my life kind of thing? I think it's really important to look back on that child self, because they really hold the clues for your future self in the sense, like everything that I used to enjoy, and everything that was kind of a pain point in my life, it's all kind of culminating with Habit Aware. And so I think looking back and sitting with that might help someone truly figure out what they want to be doing in life.
Well, and I think about all the skill sets that you both learned through the different types of education and degrees that you've gotten have kind of filled in the pieces to really run a whole business from all different angles, from the marketing and sales, from the development part, from the operational part of just running the business, being able to go out and get funding and really carve out a way to shape your work and how you're connecting with people and building this huge community. And who knew that it was this large? So are there other people that you have employed with you right now?
Yep. We, you know, our team is 9 people total.
Okay. And is that going to stay, do you think, for this year?
Yeah, well, we're looking at potentially bringing on 1 to 2 more hires, but I think we'll see as it develops and if we can find the right people.
Excellent. All right. Well, this has been just a really rich conversation, and I just really appreciate you both. I think that having a company and being married and really the way that you've taken off so quickly and the word has been spreading you've really been doing a good job of kind of building the awareness. And I think the Minnesota Cup probably helped you out a tremendous amount too in the process. Do you think?
Yeah, we've been really fortunate, I think, to get the awards that we've gotten, the recognition, the startup community, especially here in Minnesota, has been super supportive and very helpful. So
it's a great place to start a business. And I think everyone has a vested interest in seeing each other succeed. It's very, you know, more cooperative than competitive here for sure.
Oh, great. All right. Well, thank you so much for being here. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Thanks, Mike Cabea, sound engineer, videographer, photographer, mon frère de notre mère. There we go. My brother from another mother. And we'll see you all next week. Thanks for tuning in. Do you want to build upon your leadership skills and become more effective as a business owner? Do you want to reinvent yourself or evolve as you redesign your business? This is a dual innovation process. Are you ready to take charge of who you next become? If the answer is yes, I've been developing and implementing mentoring programs to thousands of emerging to experienced entrepreneurial leaders and business owners and their teams since 1992. I totally love it and feel I'm on this planet to involve the leadership in the world from the inside out. Of course, this means seeing myself as a work in progress, which is beneficial to you because I'm not stagnant and I'm motivated to create and bring you incredible programming all the time. So here's a few ways that you can get involved in our WeMentor self-leadership community. You can subscribe for free through WeMentor.com to the podcast. You can also find it on Apple Podcasts, which used to be iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, Blueberry Directory, iHeartRadio, or TuneIn Radio, which is where you can shout out your request on smart home device through Alexa, Cortana, Amazon Echo, and Google Home. You can also become a sponsor of this program and support what's happening here in all these meaningful conversations. Or you can get one-on-one mentoring and go at your own pace as you evolve into the leader that you've always wanted to become. You can join a WeMentor Mini Lab, which we offer several times during the year. We're focused on some element of self-leadership and your progress toward becoming more effective. And the last and final way in which you can get involved in WeMentor's self-leadership community is by joining a 1-year entrepreneurial leadership and mentoring lab where we dig into the details and help you with the operational along with your leadership skills so you can evolve with your entity and really, really progress in building the life that you've always wanted to build. So please check out WeMentor.com. You can email me, Nancy, at WeMentor.com, or call me, 1-612-804-8920. All right, keep listening, and we'll see you next week.